You are listening to CPA Review and more. You are listening to CPA Review and more. You are listening to CPA Review and more. You are listening to CPA Review and more.
You're listening to another episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager of Yeager CPA Review. And my name's Rob Medford. I'm your producer and director here at CPA Review and More and Yeager CPA Review. And together, we're bringing you the number one podcast for CPAs. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more information about the CPA exam, check out the Yeager CPA Review website at YeagerCPAReview.com. You'll also see that we've released a new subscription format of the same great Yeager CPA Review course that you know and love on a new month-to-month, no-commitment format. For more information on that, once again, check out the Yeager website at the link in the description field of this show. Without any further delay, I'm going to pass the microphone over to Phil.
Hi, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and I want to welcome to our podcast, CPA Review and More. Believe it or not, we're not going to do more tonight. We're going to do CPA Review. And I have with me as my guest, Philip Sukram, who's a CPA. He's an assistant professor of accountancy at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. And Phil is full-time, correct?
Yep.
I'll call you Philip, I'm sorry. Yep. All right. And he teaches at, I mentioned St. Peter's. And what courses have you taught there? And how long have you been there?
I've been at St. Peter's University for one full year. And I teach financial accounting, managerial accounting, and cost accounting.
And of those subjects, is there any other subjects you would teach if they offered it to you?
Yeah, I have a range. I'm able to teach tax classes, advanced auditing, advanced accounting, all those types of intermediate one and two.
Now, Phil is here with us today for a few reasons. One, we're going to talk about the situation with, my opinion, he can give his opinion, on students who are coming out of school with accounting majors who really don't know as much as we'd like them to know. And they end up coming to our CPA review course, and they expect us to teach them the material. Where in a lot of cases, when we have a limited amount of time, that's very hard. And it's not their fault that they haven't learned it. It's just that we'll talk about this. The professors who are teaching them, because a lot of schools are going after, they want the professors to do research. And these people who come out with PhDs in accounting, you will find out, never really took an accounting course. They just wrote their dissertation in accounting, and they become PhDs in accounting. So we'll talk about that. And also, Phil was a student. What year did you get the CPA, Phil?
I took the CPA back in 2012 to 2013.
And Phil was a student. We don't have him here today just because of that. Phil was a student, used our course for his studying, and now Phil is actually handling our... He's doing instructing for us. He's handling our message board. And we feel he has great potential. In fact, better than potential. I think he's really a good instructor. And he's going to take over a lot of the teaching, right? Which will give me more time to deal with the students one-on-one. I will still be teaching, okay? Because I love teaching. I love talking to the students. And Phil, very similar. Phil, you like talking to students. How do you find that? Do you like that, or do you prefer the old, if students talk to you, you'll just email them? How do you approach them? Do you talk to them? How do you deal with questions?
Yeah, I like the face-to-face contact, or even over the phone. I think it just allows a personal touch.
Now, you have to have a certain number of office hours, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And how many hours a week do you have to have of office hours?
I'm in the office at least, I want to say, it's 1 hour per class. So I would say 4 hours
You're
per
teaching
week.
Four classes?
Yep, four classes.
So you teach 12 credits?
Yep, 12 credits.
Okay. So now, do you find a lot of students come in and ask you questions? Or do you sit there a lot with really no one joining you?
I do not have a lot of students attending office hours.
Now, why do you think the people don't? Here it is, you're offering them time. If they don't understand something, you're there. Yet, they don't come to the office hours. Any indication? Do they just know the material so well that they don't need to ask any questions? Is that what you find?
I think sometimes they're not even sure of what questions to ask or where to start. I know that's a lot of students. They might feel intimidated approaching a professor. You know, they may feel that the question that they have to ask may be so basic that they might get berated or they might get yelled at for, you know, how do you not know, you know, 14 weeks into financial accounting, how do you not know that debits increase cash? You know, they may be afraid of that type of interaction. And I think it's a shame.
Now, you teach is what I used to call elementary accounting. Is that what it is?
Yes.
And a lot of those people in elementary accounting aren't even accounting majors.
Yes.
Because you don't really have to declare a major, at least in a lot of schools today. You don't have to declare your major, whether it's finance, accounting, until your junior year. Is that the way they work it?
That is correct. Yeah, that's not required. But yeah, the elementary accounting, also principles of accounting.
And these people are there because they have to take it. So they may be, you know, other majors, finance, and they don't really, they say, you know, they're there because they have to be there. So they figure, hey, they'll just do as little as they have to do just to get through it. And, you know, maybe they could know it better, but they don't want to go through the trouble, especially if it's not their major.
Yeah.
You know, when I went to college, we had to declare a major in the freshman year.
Gotcha.
Which I'm not sure was the best idea. But, you know, so here it is. I'm 18 years old and I have to declare accounting. And, you know, it's interesting. I went through 4 years of school and I didn't like accounting. Yeah. Because I found the professors were not exactly the most exciting people in the world. And I had a couple who had doctorates, but they never took accounting courses.
Yep.
So, you know, they were reading from the book. I hate that when they read from the book. Yeah. But anyway, so after you came out of college, and where'd you attend college?
I did my undergraduate at the University of Miami.
University of Miami, and you went there for 4 years, is that correct?
Yep, I went there.
And you got a bachelor's degree in accounting?
Got a bachelor's degree in accounting.
Or is it a bachelor's of business administration?
Yeah, bachelor's of business administration in accounting.
And we know that if you want to take the CPA exam, the AICPA, by the way, they came up with a great idea years ago, another brilliant idea, of the 150-hour rule.
Yep.
All right? You know why they came up with that 150-hour rule?
How come?
Well, here in Maryland, the University of Maryland, and this is off the record, okay? And I don't know who the person was. Well, I do. But one of the professors there, they were lobbying the legislature to get the extra fifth year so they could start a master's program. And they figured it'd have a number of people go into that master's of accounting program. All right? Well, guess what? The students, they got their 4 years, but then they went to community colleges and just got a fifth year of different courses, which actually weren't even accounting courses.
Oh, wow.
So now, one of the universities, I'll say University of Maryland, all of a sudden, they're not getting a number of people in that master's degree. People didn't want a master's degree in accountancy. Mm-hmm. If they had an undergraduate, they didn't want it. And a lot of them just didn't want to go fifth year for a graduate degree. So it sort of backfired. And I know that the fifth year, in many respects, and I don't know if it's true, when you went for Rutgers, did you have a lot of accounting courses in your fifth year? You took your master's degree at Rutgers?
Yeah, I got my master's of accountancy in financial accounting.
And how many accounting courses did you take that fifth year?
I would have to say maybe two.
This is really not, I mean, all your accounting you can get in 4 years with a bachelor's, right?
Yeah.
So why the fifth year if most of the, I mean, people, I heard down at University of Miami, and you're from, it's in Florida, right?
Yes.
Coral Gables? I heard that people take basket weaving. I don't know if they've changed it or not. All right? Anything like that, and it qualified. I don't know if that's still the case.
No, that they've changed that, those standards.
They made a little more?
Yeah.
So, you know, what do they take? Do you know what they take for a fifth year? If they stay, well, they have to get a fifth year to go for the CPA. Yeah. What are the courses now they have for this fifth year?
A lot of them they offer kind of accounting information systems, corporate governance, courses like that.
Well, corporate governance, is on the BEC part of the CPA exam, and I'm sorry, what was the other one?
Accounting Information System.
And Accounting Information is, I don't know what part, is that on also BEC?
I think so. I think it might be a little bit on auditing.
And I recommend, by the way, a lot of you who went undergraduate only had one semester of accounting. You didn't take the second semester. Mm-hmm. All right? There are advanced auditing. Is that what they call it?
Yes, yes.
So you can take that in your fifth year. It would help you with the exam. Also, how many semesters of taxes did you have at Miami? In the undergraduate?
One required semester.
And what did you do in that one required? Individuals or all the subjects?
It was individuals. I think we did a little bit of corporate, but nothing too detailed.
So they do have a second semester of taxation if you wanted to take it, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And that would cover what? Partnerships, corporations?
Yes.
All right. So there's a course maybe you want to do in your fifth year. Of course, these are a lot harder than if you take a simpler course. Yeah. Okay? All right. Now, going back to, all right, as I said, Philip attended his fifth year at Rutgers University. All right, and you got a master's, a MBA, or?
A master's of accountancy in financial accounting.
Is it a master of accountancy or master of business administration with a concentration in accounting?
Master of accountancy.
Okay. Now, did you find in the master of accountancy program that most of the people in that program were people who didn't have an undergraduate degree in accounting?
I would say there was a good amount, yes.
All right, so what... I don't know if I asked this. Mm-hmm. All right. What did you take in your fifth year? All right.
In my fifth year?
Did I ask you that already? I'm sorry.
There was a couple. So I actually have the list. There is...
You carry that near and dear to your heart?
Yeah, it's
on his phone. Yeah.
It's on LinkedIn.
He also calls the professors every once in a while. Keeps in touch.
Exactly. They have governmental accounting, advanced accounting research project. They have corporate governance, ethics in business, accounting in the digital era, decoding of corporate financial communications.
You can decode financial information?
Yeah.
Isn't that a form of hacking?
I think that was a form of reading a balance sheet and income statement.
Decoding. Sounds a little strange to me. But anyway, I'm sorry. And, actually, the good courses there that help, the governmental and not-for-profit, did that help you at all for the governmental and not-for-profit on the exam?
I think it definitely... Well, I took the exam prior to attending the master's. So,
oh, you could?
Yeah. Because in the state of New York, you have 120 hours, you could sit for the exam.
You think if you had the governmental and not-for-profit before you took the exam, that would have helped you from the graduate program?
Without a doubt. Yeah, I think so.
Who taught those courses in the graduate program? All PhDs?
All PhDs,
And there
much.
Were PhDs in accounting?
Not necessarily, no.
Not necessarily. Why? I mean, like the computer courses.
Yeah. There was a couple different concentrations that those professors have.
All right. Now, we were talking earlier about PhDs in accounting. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, I, every once in a while I teach a course at a school, but the CPA review takes most of my time. But the problem with education today, I consider a problem, is that these schools, now, by the way, universities are accredited by regional accreditations, all right? Middle states, that's what accredits the schools here, in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. Then you have Southern Association. Then you have North Central, Western, I think that's the four accreditations. But anyway, all right, those are just regional accreditations. Well, that wasn't enough. So after 1969, I think it was, all right, this organization formed called the American Assembly of Collegiate Schools of Business. And I don't know how they convinced universities that if you get our accreditation, you will be a better school for it. Well, they accredit, interestingly, within the School of Business, and you have to have a School of Business, by the way. You can't have an accounting department.
Yeah.
All right, it's got to be a School of Business. And they will give an accreditation, the AICSB accreditation, to the accounting department. And also the School of Business.
Yes.
Correct?
That is correct.
All right. Now, the problem with that is the present requirements of the AICSB is that you have to have a certain number of PhDs, correct?
That is correct.
And if they're teaching accounting, does a PhD have to be in accounting? Do you know?
Nope, they do not.
They don't. So it might be that you have PhDs there that are teaching accounting that have never taken an accounting course. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And they probably, if they don't have a PhD, well, even if they have a PhD in accounting, all right, and if they don't, they have a PhD in economics, yeah. What's going to happen is they're teaching these accounting students, all right, and actually they're learning as they're teaching.
Exactly.
And they can't qualify to sit for the CPA exam.
Nope.
Now, I personally think, you know, that when you're going to school for accounting, if you want to get any place, you got to take that CPA. So the CPA is really sort of the finishing part of the degree. All right. You go to your undergraduate, you got to get the 150 hours. But if you want to make it any place in accounting or even in a finance area, you want to go to accounting finance, you need that CPA.
Yes.
All right. But, all right, let's compare this to law school. When you go to law school, you go undergraduate. All right. A lot of people go undergraduate. They get a degree in political science. I know that. All right. And then they realize you can't get a job in political science. So they go to law school for 3 years. But in law school, all the professors teaching are attorneys.
Yes.
Okay. You're not going to see a person who's selling groceries teaching. Mm-hmm. That's a little extreme example. All right. But they're all attorneys. And actually, I'm not sure if they're preparing you for the bar exam or they're just teaching you law. That I'm not sure. But it's still attorneys. And then, of course, you're going to take a review course, like CPA review. You'll take a bar review course, and that's how you'll get ready for the exam. Now, let's go back to this, Phil. We were talking about this.
Yep.
What do you think of? What do you think of the way accounting is taught today? With this, you know, they don't care about what the PhD is in. First of all, these AACSB. And I'm not knocking the AACSB. I think some of the requirements I don't agree with, but the AACSB, you have to have a certain number of doctorates, right?
Yes.
Just doctorates?
Yeah.
Not even in accounting?
No. Yeah, I think the percentages of professors, the research piece and the service piece to the university has to be in certain categories.
Okay. So they're teaching there, and they're teaching courses that probably, as I said, they never had.
Yep.
Right? What are you finding? How do you get involved with are there professors like that at your university?
Not at my university. At St. Peter's University, our Department of Accountancy and Business Law is stacked with CPAs and JD.
And do they have experience in the real world?
Yes. Everybody is a working professional.
All right. So you went to Rutgers. You said you had a lot of doctorates.
Yes.
Are you familiar with any students who get out of the Rutgers accounting program as far as fact that they have PhDs in accounting, mm-hmm. teaching them, and yet these people have never really had accounting courses, or they don't qualify to sit for the CPA exam. Do you know if any of them have ever commented the fact that they have PhDs in accounting teaching them, and they come out of the class and they don't feel like they learned anything?
Yeah.
You must go to different groups, where you go to meetings, like the American Accounting Association.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you're not going to talk to those professors and ask them. But do you have contact with students? Do they comment on that at all? That, we didn't learn a lot. The person we had didn't really know the material. Do you hear that from students? The students?
Not at my university, but throughout my career, I hear that all the time, especially just meeting other peers have said, you know, this professor isn't that great, or, you know, that I didn't really understand this professor. They had a tough time explaining it. It could be due to they haven't worked in the industry before. That's definitely a piece of the puzzle.
And they really want these people, these AACSB, they want them to do research.
Yeah.
That's, in fact, you want to get tenure in these universities, all right? They care more about how many papers you actually published and what type of journals they're published in, all right? And they don't really care that much about the teaching. They just assume everyone can teach.
Yes.
Bad assumption, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know, teaching CPA review all these years, all right, I'm finding that, and it's not the students' faults, it's just the people that are teaching them, all right? If I go back to the late 70s, early 80s, all right, the people who were teaching, this is before the AACSB became accredited, all the universities, they were still non-AACSB. They had more professors who had practical experience who might have been MBA CPAs, all right? And the students came out of there, because when they came into our review course, they came to the review just for review.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's been happening is they don't come to CPA Review anymore for review.
They come to learn.
They come to learn.
Yeah.
All right? So now they come to Yeager University, which wasn't the intention of what we were going to be, you know. And by the way, we're not accredited by the ASCSB. All right? So, but, you know, they come to us and they say, well, wait a minute. I never had corporate taxation. I never had partnership taxation. Well, first of all, they don't have to take the course, but some of them will say, oh, yeah, I had a course in that. So I'll say, well, how come you're having so much trouble with it? Well, the person who taught it to me was a PhD, and he never really worked in taxes. And one person once said to me, what the person would do is he was always one chapter ahead of us, all right, who taught the taxation. So here it is. They come in, and, you know, I go over this stuff, the partnership taxation, corporate taxation, which is actually the ASCPA tests that heavily because they know that most people don't know it. And the people said, well, you know, I actually learned it from you, taking this course. And I say, wait a minute, I'm not here to be a university. But, you know, over the years, that's what I've ended up being, all right? Sort of a sub-university.
Yeah.
And I don't mind it, you know? The students work harder. They have to work harder, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they do catch on, all right? And if they have trouble, I don't look down upon them and say, hey, you know, I mean, I knew one guy had a review school, and he would, you know, get together with him for lunch every once in a while. He'd say, you know, these students today are so darn dumb. They don't know this. And I'd say, yeah, it's not that they're not dumb. They just didn't have it in school. It wasn't taught well. And I am always willing to spend the time to help people who didn't have a course. That's what you got to do in CPA review. And I assume you see that.
All the time.
Now, this is the first, you do work for us. And, you know, with these long conversations. And I mentioned you took our course.
Yes.
All right. And by the way, what made you decide, and by the way, this is not, I didn't tell them what to say for this. What made you decide to take the Yeager CPA review program? And what year did you do this?
So I did the Yeager CPA program in 2012.
And we were not live. It was still streaming video, a video?
Yep, streaming video.
Okay. And I asked them, why did you take it? You know, what made you pick our course? Besides the fact that I know we're damn good. All right. why did you pick our course?
Yeah, I was shopping for different review courses.
Where did you shop for this? In Target? No, you were shopping? Yeah, go ahead.
Online, looking at all the different review course providers, Becker CPA, Wiley CPA, everyone that was on the market. I personally didn't work for a CPA firm, so I didn't necessarily have the, at that time, $3,000, $4,000 to spend on, Becker CPA review course. And I was shopping, I was looking at the different teaser videos, and Yeager CPA just kind of, it really resonated with me. I didn't feel like I had a strong accounting basis coming out of undergrad. I wasn't sure if I was even going to pursue accounting at all due to my experience at undergrad. But the way you broke down problems and the way you were kind of going through each section piece by piece, and you would go through a section and then you would do a question on that section. So you wouldn't just throw 3 hours of video at somebody and throw them 60 multiple choice questions. It was kind of, you really took the time to explain concepts that I didn't know, and I didn't have to feel ashamed for not knowing. So that personability and just seeing your passion in it is why I went with your course.
Well, that's very kind of you. Did you get demos of all the other courses? Were they available?
At that time, I didn't even get to that stage because out of all of my research, I felt like yours was going to be where I was comfortable. So I demoed you and I liked what I saw. And I had friends that had other courses that I peeked behind a little bit. And I just knew that I was having a lot of issues, even with those other courses I was looking at, and they did not have the style that you did. And I knew that once I saw the other courses and I noticed the style wasn't there and that you just really took the time to explain concepts, you chopped it down piece by piece and then gave questions, I just knew I made the right decision after that too.
Gee, I had style. That's a real compliment. I didn't know. And by the way, were the demos, did you see me on the demos?
Yeah, I did see
you. And I was pretty damn good looking, right?
You're definitely good looking. You were there. It was, you know, your phone number was available, and I thought you know, no other course really. I was like, if I had an issue and I can go to the owner or, you know, the person providing this course, like, what, you know, if he's given that much time to this, I would assume he's doing a good job at it.
And Philip, I mean, I hate to put you on the spot here. How do I look today?
Actually, when I saw the videos, because I kept in touch with your videos well after I passed the exam, and I was like, man, Phil's looks like he's getting younger. Like, what's different about him? Like,
it's, I love this guy. Yeah.
it's true. I was.
You were more gray that back then, Phil. You did have a little less color to your hair.
No. I never had gray. You know, it's funny. I have a doctor I go to, an orthopedic doctor.
Yeah.
And he, what's common is that, it's interesting. We have something. He is, he just turned 60.
Yeah.
And he has jet black hair. And he and I share the same birthday.
Okay.
Now, he never, actually, he's showing me a picture.
There it is.
God, I haven't aged a day.
Oh, man.
Anyway, mm-hmm. So, you know, I actually, every year I leave a message on his machine, his voicemail, and wish him happy birthday. Do you think he's ever called me? Hell no. No, he doesn't call me. But I said to him, I said, God, I mean, there's no gray in there. And he says to me, well, he says, I follow my grandfather. He says, my grandfather never had a gray hair. So I said, you have that color? Well, he said, oh, yeah, it's, it never changes. So I said, yeah, I guess your nose is growing, I told him, you know. But anyway, yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Rob, you can't do that, unfortunately, because
I have no hair to color. Yeah.
Now, by the way, Philip has a lot of hair. All right?
Trying something different.
Yeah. Is that a member?
The professor look. Yeah, it's like, natural.
No, you know what? You don't look like a professor.
Albert Einstein.
He looks like a young student.
There you go.
You know? But, no, I appreciate that you told the people. And by the way, I'm not being, I just want people to hear, you know, why people pick courses or, mm-hmm. you know, they looked into it. I encourage you to do that. Mm-hmm. When you're looking into courses, just don't follow the crowds, you know?
Yeah.
All right? You got to do, hey, this is an important decision. You may not think it is, but it's an important decision to find a course that you feel comfortable with, that you, you know, is the instructor giving you what you want on the video. Most courses today, obviously, are not live. Mm-hmm. Even though they say they might be live, mm-hmm. okay? Live means it's not a dead person up there, all right? So anyway, no, it's like, look at the demos. If they don't show you demos, then you have to wonder, what are they hiding, all right? Also, look at a sample of the materials.
Yeah.
Because I keep pushing the blueprints, all right? Do you mention the blueprints at school?
Oh, yeah. The AICPA blueprints is what's on the exam.
Where do you mention that? I'm just curious. What class?
I mentioned that in all my classes from the beginning, from Principles of Accounting 1 and 2, which encompasses financial management.
Do they really care about that principles class?
I mean, you have students from all different backgrounds. Okay. So those that are accounting majors are interested. Some that aren't, you know, they're learning their way through college, but I'd like to think there's things that stick.
Do the accounting textbooks mention the blueprints?
Not at all.
And that's really what's interesting, you know? Now, do you know that maybe 60% of the people taking the exam still don't know about the blueprints?
That's mind-blowing to me, because that's where the exam, that's the answers to the exam. That's literally what's going to be in the exam.
It's not like the people at the ASCPA are not, you know, very personable. I mean, like Mike Decker, all right, we met him, director of examinations?
And Richard Gallagher.
And Richard Gallagher, two of the nicest guys.
Yep.
And we really, I don't know why, I mean, they're just two people within that organization, but there's something wrong that the message is not going out. Now, I know one of the reasons it's not going out. The other courses are not mentioning it.
And that definitely, I mean, I didn't hear the AICPA blueprints being mentioned by a lot of different providers. I mean, I know Richard Gallagher and Mike Decker, they've been telling, you know, the blueprints, got to have it.
Because I gave a talk, I was invited to University of Nevada, the Las Vegas campus, and there were two other reps from two other competing courses, all right? I was the third one to speak, all right? These first two, all right, didn't say anything about the blueprints. It's like they, you know, what planet are they on? I said, all right. And then what happened was, I was the third one, and this is typical Phil Yeager. I said, excuse me, I noticed you didn't talk about the blueprints at all. Do you go to those meetings where the course providers are? Have I seen you at those meetings? And then I looked and I said, you don't attend those meetings. It's only for the owners of the courses, okay?
Yeah.
All right? So you didn't attend those meetings, right? And they say, yes. So you must not know about the blueprints. Well, the group laughed. They thought that was funny, all right? And other people might say, you're making fun of them. Well, yeah, I was. Because I think it's pathetic. They're coming out, talking about the exam, and they don't talk about the main thing, the blueprints. So, you know, anyway. I'm just curious how I have not been...
Oh, you got plenty of time.
We got plenty of time. Okay, yeah. All right. Phil, what do you want to talk about? Tell me, what do you do? What do you do for fun, other than read the FASBs?
Other than read the FASBs? You know, I help out Yeager CPA, help out the students on the instructor hotline for those students that...
This is what you do for fun?
It's what I do as well. Yeah.
Yeah, now, you live in New York City, well, right?
When you're not working. What are you doing when you're not working? Yeah, when you're not teaching?
I live in New York City, just trying to spend quality time with my family and just, you know, friends.
Your family's in New York, too?
My family's also in New York.
And you live in... I'm sorry.
I live in Manhattan.
Manhattan?
Yep.
What part of Manhattan?
I live in the East Village.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, nice area. Nice area.
Yeah, yes. Yeah,
you nice know, area. Actually, New York's great for someone, you know, who's, you know, younger, yeah, you know, and point. There's so much there. You know,
it's a lot.
Actually, I would say that if you got it, you're coming out of college, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Would you recommend they get a job with the Big Four?
I mean, I think you could get valuable experience at any accounting firm. I think you could also get very valid experience doing accounting for just any place. I don't think Big Four or a CPA firm is the only option. There's valid experience.
Yeah, but to go for the CPA, isn't there an experience requirement?
The experience requirement is to work 1 year under a licensed CPA.
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you have to work in the same company?
Same company could be. That's how I got my 1 year. I worked.
Okay, what happens if these people can't find a CPA in their company?
Yeah, I guess they would have to be the work experience that they would have to get is at a company that has a CPA that to some degree that they're reporting to.
Now, I'm really against that rule because what about people that go work for the federal government? Not a lot of CPAs they're working under.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're making it. They're really sort of blocking those people out.
Yeah.
All right? I'm trying to think what else. I didn't go to public accounting initially. I went to the corporate sector.
Same.
And the person I worked under, all right, didn't even have a degree. Mm-hmm. I was in the accounting department. Okay. All right? So if I was going for the CPA, which I wasn't, and they had that requirement, I'd have a real problem. But when I graduated school, and I said there was nothing wrong with this, 4 years bachelor's degree in accounting. All right. Maryland had no experience requirement to get the license. And the exam back there was a certificate, not a license. And what happened was, you know, I passed the exam. I didn't pass the first time. I don't want anybody to think I'm a raving genius. I didn't pass the first time, but I didn't give up.
Me neither.
Went back. You didn't pass the first time?
No. Nope.
How'd you do the first time? The best what?
I failed. Yeah.
You failed?
Yeah.
How many times did it take, would you say?
Oh, quite a few times. If we're doing numbers, I think I've taken all the exams probably more than 10 times, all of them. I mean, I was learning a lot. I was making mistakes.
Did you ever want to quit?
No, that's how I got here. I knew I had the capability to make it happen, and I really believed it wasn't necessarily about the talent. It was about your ability to kind of pick yourself up and figure out what don't you know. I mean, the reality is you're not going to know every single thing on the exam, but it's not, the exam isn't put there to get 100 on, or 99, I should say. The exam is to say, you know, this is what it takes to be a qualified accountant. Okay. or a licensed accountant. And, you know, you want to have a wide range of knowledge of topics that you should know. You know, it builds confidence. Right. So if someone comes to me with a tax issue, you know, although I have worked in audit and tax, I mean, I have the confidence as a licensed CPA to say, well, I know I spent my time studying and I do remember these certain items and you know, it's about resiliency. That's what the exam is, because I've had a great manager who, you know, I wanted to emulate my career off of, when I worked my first job in a nonprofit accounting department, and he didn't pass his exams and he quit. And I just felt like he had the ability to go so far in his career and still does. But that's the difference between having doors open up and not. And it's just the ability of not giving up.
The people, did you know a lot of people took the CPA exam?
I know a handful.
Did anybody quit after they didn't pass?
A lot of people stopped. A lot of people I worked for that, you know, I looked up to just stopped taking it, for whatever reason.
What do you think of these courses today? They're now all have this, except us, of course. We have 18 months. We talk about it. But now the new deal is to give people unlimited time to sit for the CPA exam. Mm-hmm. Okay? You can, till the day you die. Okay? Do you think that's a selling point?
I think they're doing a disservice to the customers, because the reality is the way the CPA exam is set up, after you pass that first part, you have 18 months to pass the next three. Now, if you had forever to pass it, you know, that just lengthens the likelihood of you stopping the exam or not wanting to take it. Having that ability to stick to 18 month schedule exhibits discipline, but it also sets a real target point. If you have 18 months to pass the next three exams, I know that no matter what, I need to get this done, and I need to dig deep and look inside myself and say, how bad do I want to pass this exam? You know, do I want to do an extra 10 minutes of studying? Do I want to, you know, I might have to pass up on, you know, going to a friend's birthday or a family's birthday just to get that extra day studying in so that I could get this done, because, you know, you can't plan for life. I mean, eventually, you know, as you get older, you may want to have a family, or you may settle down, or you may get promoted and more responsibilities put on your plate. And if you had an unlimited timeline to take this exam, you may never complete it. You know, it's like going to undergrad, right? Like you take 15 credits at a semester. Yeah, if you had to complete 120 credits, some people would probably take 40 years to do it, but. And then you wouldn't be able to have your bachelor's until you're well in your 60s or 70s. And, you know, there's a reason for these deadlines, and there's a reason that you have to set a realistic target to get to where you want to be.
Yeah, they're really discouraging deadlines, you know.
Yeah.
And realistically, if you take a course and you don't pass after a certain number of tries, you're probably going to switch to another course.
Yeah.
All right? Or quit.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I took a course and after six tries, I did not pass, I'd have to really sit down and say, well, what the problem is here? You know, mm-hmm. Is this material so great? Because I wouldn't keep, you know, some people just keep using the same material. They keep failing. Mm-hmm. And I tell them that nothing's changing. You know, you're not going to open up that book one day and it's going to be all new material, you know, from another course in there. Oh. But no, I mean, it's really, they're doing a disservice. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a gimmick as far as I'm concerned. They put that word unlimited. Mm-hmm. Everyone likes unlimited.
It's like a cell phone plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unlimited. Well, yeah, I want unlimited data. Do I want unlimited time for everything?
Well, no. You see, I don't have unlimited data. Mm-hmm. All right? But
you don't need it. You don't utilize it.
Well, no. I mean, first of all, I think I paid $10 for an additional gig of data. For the, you know, text messages.
Yeah.
I never use anywhere near this. And maybe I don't do as many as you do, all right? But I'm talking to Rob here. But the thing is, I never use it. So it just carries over. Mine just carries over.
Right. So, like, on my data plan, I want the unlimited. Because if I was paying by the gigabyte, last month I used 117 gigabytes of data on my cell phone alone. Like,
yeah, as an accountant, I would not advise you to pay per gigabyte.
No, it doesn't make sense. But you don't utilize your cell phone for every single thing you do.
You gotta stop writing those letters that you do, obscene letters to people you don't know. All right, text message.
Well, no, for me,
sign those letters, by the way.
with my finger. With my finger on the touchscreen. No, like for me, it's a matter of if I'm at a coffee shop and I am processing a credit card, I'm using my cell phone with a VPN as opposed to the hotspot at the coffee shop, because anyone can be on that and who knows what's possibly lurking. I'm not going to take someone's credit card information.
You know, when someone gives you something for nothing, okay, like AT&T, right? Unlimited data?
There's always a catch.
There's a catch someplace, you know? They must know that most people are never going to use that much.
Right.
But they want the option. They always want the thing to know that they can have it just in case.
Well,
and the just in case doesn't always happen, does it?
No. And this can also tie back into the new Jaeger subscription. You have the three different levels. With Verizon, for the data plan, for the unlimited, they've got three different levels. Level A is only $60 a month. It caps you out at, I think, 15 gigabytes before it throttles you down to...
By the way, we are not affiliated with
that. We are not, and they're not paying me in any way.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice if they did, but anyway.
The next level up is $80 a month, and that caps you out at 40 gigabytes a month. My level caps me out at 75 gigabytes before it throttles. So I get higher priority for paying higher fee. And for me, I'll pay that convenience.
You know, people, you know, you go into Best and you buy something. And they'll say, do you want the warranty that goes on 2 years, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I say, I never get those extended warranties because of this reason. Chances are, all right, that will not break in the first year. Okay. And secondly, I will buy a new one if anything goes wrong. Because you know what the deal is with these warranties on the phone? All right? If they'll give you a new phone, they don't give you a new phone. They give you a used phone.
Yeah, it's a refurbished.
It's a refurbished phone.
There's the perfect example of, what would you call that, bait and switch?
Very similar, yeah.
Yeah.
There's very few extended warranties that are worth purchasing. Like for me, if I'm purchasing a part for a client... At certain stores, they do brand new exchange where they literally grab one off of the shelf, but you have to have the box, you have to have the receipt and the original part, but they'll grab a brand new one as if it was purchased.
Yeah, because a lot of times they give you a refurbished something.
Well, I buy a lot of parts. Problems. I buy a lot of parts at Micro Center. They only sell new parts.
Yeah.
Their warranty is through them. Not through a third-party insurance.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Micro Center. Okay? What is Micro Center?
Micro Center is an electronics company. It's similar to Best Buy, only it's more geared towards only computers. They sell other electronics, but it's mainly, I'd say 90% of their products are computers.
Anybody from Micro Center, we will do your advertising dirt cheap. Just mention us, okay?
There's one right in Rockville, too.
Oh, is there?
Okay. Yeah.
There's one in Garden City, I think.
Garden City, Long Island.
Yeah. There's a handful of them. They're like Radio Shack, only they're surviving.
Philip, what's your recommendation? What would you say to someone who's, you know, they're 18 years old and they're going to go to college? Do you think it's a good idea for parents to tell them what they should major in? Or, you know, what do you think? You know, would you recommend accounting as a major versus some other areas? Like, a lot of people major in psychology, which is nothing. But, you know, accounting can be a dull subject.
I mean, it depends. I feel that it depends how it's taught. You know, to answer your first question, I mean, I would highly recommend accounting as a major, but that's because, you know, that's my passion. That's what I like to do. I have numerous students in my classroom who are not only accounting majors, but a lot that aren't. And I don't ever want to force them in the accounting direction because I think that to be successful at what you want to do, it's very cliche to say, but you really do have to like that subject or you have to like the nuances behind it. So I try to challenge the students that want to do well and want to do more. And maybe there's some students that want to learn accounting because it's the language of business. I mean, we all know that, but at the same time, they may want to take an entrepreneur route. And in order to really build your own company, you got to know the finances of your company. You got to know how to read those finances and how those transactions go. So they may not be accounting majors, and I never want to stop them from that. I want them to pursue their dreams. But they also understand that accounting is the backbone, is the language of business, and what you can do with accounting, it's limitless opportunities. So I always recommend accounting to students. And people always say, oh, it's a dry subject. And it can be, depending on who's delivering the information. Because if you took real world cases, or, you know, showed a student the balance sheet of Nike, or, you know, any publicly traded company, or, you know, their favorite shopping store, I think if you were to show them their balance sheet and income statement and explain to the students, okay, well, this is how every time you buy a piece of product from this company, let's say Nike, okay, this is how the transaction affects the income statement and balance sheet, and this is how these numbers come from. Once you relate to the student on something that's, you know, that really speaks to them, I think that's when they start to get interested and really get to see the full picture, the full spectrum.
Philip, I want to thank you for being on our podcast today. And I think there's a lot of good information given out. At least I hope the people listening think it's a lot of good information. And all I can say is, this is Phil Yeager again with our podcast called CPA Review and...
More.
Thank you very much.
You were going to mess it up.
I wasn't going to mess it up. But anyway, please listen. Every Tuesday, we do have a new podcast. Okay?
Correct.
And with all the different areas. And by the way, I must say, and I'm going to say this in advance, June 18th, we have a special guest who is coming on the podcast.
Well, we're recording on June 18th, so it won't be out then.
Sorry about that. But June 18th, all right, we have one of the associate producers of the Weekend Today Show, who I'm going to she's going to share where she went, what her major was, and how she became an associate producer at NBC at 30 Rock in New York. So I think that will be interesting if you listen to that. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I know I enjoyed doing it. Philip, once again, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me along, Phil Yeager.
And I will switch it over to the best looking associate producer, executive producer that I know, okay? And his name is, what's your name, sir?
Robert Redford.
Okay? All right? Who, by the way, his side business is bots.
No, it's
okay,
not.
So anyway, thanks, Rob. Take care.
All right, once again, thanks for listening to this week's episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. Once again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm the executive producer here at Yeager CPA Review and CPA Review and More. Don't forget to tune in to tonight's special second episode for the first Tuesday of the month dual podcast, where we have a special Facebook Live questions and answers. If you are listening to this on Tuesday morning and you haven't yet registered, don't forget to do that. We have the description with the link below. Till next time, take care, everyone.
Once again, I'd like to thank you for being the best part of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager of Yeager CPA Review. Again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm your producer and director here at CPA Review and More and Yeager CPA Review. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like to hear about on the podcast, we want to hear from you. Send me an email to podcast@YeagerCPAReview.com. That email will be in the description bar below. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about the CPA exam, check out YeagerCPAReview.com and you can learn more about our new subscription format. Again, if you're in the market for a CPA review course, Yeager now offers a month-to-month subscription format of their CPA review product with a no long-term commitment, so you can check it out, take your exams, and then when you're done, simply cancel your subscription or keep it rolling if you want continued access to the course material. For more information about our subscription, check out YeagerCPAReview.com. Until next time, everybody, thank you for listening and take care.